You're tuned to the Curb Your Dogma podcast. And now, here is your dangerously underqualified host, Dr. Maury Robertson.
Well, welcome to Curb Your Dogma, Part B here of The Apostate and the Infidel. I'm here with my friend Jim Armstrong. Last week, we talked about, you know, how Jim became the infidel. And today, I guess I want to try to explain why I accept the title apostate.
So what I just sensed about Maury, what I sensed about you was that I could talk to you and there was no judgment. And I have some, you know, I have a kind of a dark sense of humor. I'm fairly irreverent and just little quirks and things. And, you know, in all of my church experience, spiritual leaders tried to curb that. They tried to, like, you know, put a muzzle on it or what have you. It was always looked at with some suspicion, sideways looks, or just completely ignored, you know, because I didn't talk the talk. I didn't fit in the way you fit in if you check all the check boxes, mm-hmm. you know. And what I felt around Maury was it didn't matter what I said. It didn't matter what I was thinking. Even if some people would have considered it heretical, we would sit and talk about it. And there was just, it was acceptance. And he saw all of this questioning and different things as seeking God, where in my past, it had always been defined as me rebelling against God and me being a bad Christian or mm-hmm. what have you. And Maury saw it 180. Nah, Jim, you're looking for answers. And some of the points that I would make, I would be sitting in a service. I went to Maury's church, and I'd be sitting there, and it'd show up in a sermon sometimes, which is a little scary. Yeah. But of course, you played clips of the Simpsons and other things too. Yeah. So a lot of stuff wound up in his sermons. But it made me feel like the thoughts that I had and the ideas that I had were legitimate. To meet you and have somebody who is a trained theologian, so it's not like you don't know what you're talking about, embracing some of the things that I said and not being horrified by it.
Yeah. What you just said is exactly how I want people to feel around me. That I can't tell you how good it feels to hear you say that, because that's what I want Anchor Point to be. That's what I want my life to be. That's what I want the world to be. That is my dream, a world where we treat each other like Jim just described. So the fact that I pulled that off in some weird way with him makes me absolutely delighted. If you're listening to this, I hope you feel that from me, because I really want this to be a place where our growth together and our love of God is about a trajectory we're on. It's about, you know, we were talking about those three boxes last week. It's not about moving from this box and getting into that box, because this is the right box, not that box. It's not boxes. It's a journey. It's open. It's free. Anyway, thank you so much.
Well, I would, we'd be on fishing trips. I'm smoking cigars. We'd sit by the river. I'm drinking beers,
yeah.
You know, before we're getting ready to head home. Maury's driving. Maury.
He loves saying this.
I tell people my pastor is my designated driver. Always had Maury come along because he doesn't drink or not very much, and but I'd smoke, I'd curse, it just didn't matter. He wasn't thrown by it, and then the next Sunday I'd hear one of our stories come up in a sermon or something.
With minus the cursing and drinking, right? But yeah,
it'd have been better if you'd left it in.
Well, that kind of gets into then this question of being the apostate, because my apostasy has nothing to do with I just have become a foul-mouthed curse guy, or I've tried to become a drinker. I really did, just to be, you know, hang out with Jim and people.
I worked on him, folks. Oh, I worked on him.
He tried. I don't like the stuff, and I feel spaced out enough.
We'll pray for you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, he tried to make me a smoker. I mean, he's worked really hard. And so my apostasy is like not behavioral.
All I succeeded in doing was getting him to give up his church of 20 years, quit his seminary, go live in a trailer and travel all over the United States. He blames me for that, by the way. It's not my fault.
It's his fault.
Not my
fault.
If
only I'd never met you. But
as the great Han Solo said, it's not my fault.
Oh, man. Well, to me being... same thing, back to that box. You know, for me, the box was theological and relational. And that was the things that were cracking. First, of course, these questions. And, you know, I was supposed to be the guy with the answers. I was not only in the box, I was the guy who had the answers when people needed a box. I was supposed to provide that box, defend the box, all of that. And I just found that increasingly hard to do. To live within the, you know, kind of strict dogma that was a part of my tradition. But then I think, honestly, the part that really created the biggest stress in me was relational. And it was the way that the dogmas, and also, see, like in church, it's not just what you believe, but it's, okay, so how are we going to do this thing called church together? Because it's sacred business, what we sing. How we arrange the chairs, what order it is, what ministries we adopt, how we spend the money. All of these millions of questions became sacred questions. And over those sacred questions, many friendships were fractured. It sort of hit me one day. I woke up and realized...
Maybe it's just that you're annoying.
That's possible. You know, you guys, you know, here I am being this radical guy. You just don't, if you don't know me, that is the farthest thing from me. I am a middle child peacemaker. I want to wrap my arms around the whole world and just all be friends. And so this being controversial thing is not something I do because I love it. I hate it. But I found that being a part of this kind of narrowly defined God and narrowly defined friendships where everything was sacred business, it created so much strife. Every single last person who was a part of the origin of the church that I founded eventually left. And all of them left for reasons that I could not have cared less about. Music, singing, or organizational things, or whether we're going to name it this or name it that. It's stuff like that. And I just kept thinking, is this really what Jesus had in mind? And not only that, but like it wasn't like we were having an impact on people around us. We were segregated from people around us. And so all of that, I'm just describing pieces that were not making sense in my box. I just got to a point where it's not like I woke up one day and all of this hit. It was more like having, another ounce of weight laid on my chest every week or something. And it just finally got to a point where I didn't resign my church or the seminary because I had some great vision or whatever. I just was, I can't take this anymore. I'm going to die. I kind of mean that literally. I mean, I've never actually been close to killing myself, but there have been times I really wanted to die. I was so miserable that if I could have just cut fast forward till death, I would have done it. I was so depressed because, you know, and here I'm supposed to be leading the charge of joy and all this kind of stuff, and my church is killing me. And it's not because of the people. I really want to underline that too. I love the people in my church. Good people, but church was just killing me. It made normal friendship impossible. So anyway, that's kind of how my box exploded.
All right, so when your box exploded, that, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but so why do you consider yours, why do I refer to you as the apostate?
I guess it's kind of like back to your checklist thing, but I mean, there's a list of beliefs. There's a definition of what it means to be a Christian and what it means you have to believe and how you have to behave to be a Christian. And I couldn't do that anymore. So when I stopped doing that, you know, the word apostate just means, you know, ones who leaves, rejects his former tradition or whatever. And I've done that. I really have. And I truly am an apostate. I mean, that the label is tongue-in-cheek, because it's not like I left religion to get away from Jesus. It's like I left it to follow Jesus. But
sure.
And yet, it was an apostasy. It was leaving my tradition, and including my livelihood and my security and everything that most people in their middle 50s kind of think matters. And, you know, and it's just like, you know, I just can't do it. Whatever the price, I just can't do it.
There may have been liquor involved.
None.
All right. So you just said, okay, so that's how your box blew up. Why don't we take a minute and review the three boxes that Richard Rohr talked about? Just kind of recap what we talked about last time. I kind of talked about it, what my perspective on it. What's your perspective on the three boxes?
Yeah, I love what we did last week. But yeah, it starts with order, and then something disrupts that order, then disorder, box number two, and then reorder. And we talked a little bit last week about how that is like not, that's really an ongoing process in a person's life. It's not like, you know, ABC. It's not like I got all the answers now and I have it all figured out. It's like I embrace that process as a dynamic of my life. Disorder is always a part of my life. A box is probably always part of my life. I think I got this figured out. And then something's always blowing it up, creating disorder. And then I'm always searching for a deeper understanding.
One of the things that I mentioned last week is that, you know, when that box, we talked about this, where when you're living in a box that's ordered and it starts to crumble, cracks appear on the walls and it starts to fall apart, that's a very scary, it can be disorienting, it can be a really traumatic place to be.
Oh, yeah.
And my comment was, well, that's what Anchor Point is about. It's for people who find that their ordered box is starting to crack, and they wonder, you know, what's, maybe you could expand on that.
Well, yeah, and I would like to emphasize, it may not even be a religious box. It may be a cultural box. Maybe you were born an atheist or whatever, but we all kind of have these ideas that allow us to feel a sense of security. We know, we wake up and the world makes sense. You know, like, God's here, I'm here. If I do this, this will happen. They're sort of just like, okay, I'm in this very defined, predictable space. And when that falls apart, oh man, is that traumatic. I went from, you know, after I resigned my church and then left the seminary, I don't have the words to describe how disorienting that was. It was mind-blowing. I didn't know if I was a Christian. I didn't know if there was a God. I didn't know if I'm like, do I even exist? I mean, I'm like really fundamentally levels of confusion and despair that are really uncomfortable.
Maury was fun to party with at this time.
Oh,
especially
yeah.
If you had a couple of beers. It was entertaining as hell. Oh, no, I felt it. We had many conversations where you were just, man, struggling. And I saw it firsthand. I saw the explosion firsthand.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you that moving on to like reorder, to me, okay, again, reorder to me is not another box. And it's not something I'm saying, you got to believe this because that other box is stupid and my box is right. That's not what I'm saying. But here's what I think. When having reread the Gospels and Jesus over and over again, trying to see, was there something here we've been missing? I see in the message of Jesus what we're talking about. I find a freedom. I don't see Jesus going around spouting dogma or saying, you guys got your doctrine all wrong. Here's the right one. I see the God-man, you know, but he's explaining and defining the kingdom of God, which is a mysterious transcendent realm that's, you know, defined by all these parables that are, you don't walk away saying, oh, okay, now I get it. You walk away from his parables going, wow, I got to think about that. It's like there. It makes it even more mysterious. It's like he's trying to describe things that are beyond words, and I find in Jesus something very beautiful. You know, an invitation to pursue God, to embrace God, but also to embrace mystery, but fundamentally to do all of that in a spirit of love. That seems to be the one non-negotiable for Jesus.
You could almost say he went around blowing people's boxes up.
Oh, man. Read the Gospels again and watch who he gets mad at. And by the way, watch who he threatens, damnation and destruction and all these horrible, terrifying metaphors. They're all aimed at religious people. They're never aimed at, you drinkers, you better watch out, or you prostitute. No.
Wait a minute. He was a drinker.
No, that was non-alcoholic wine, Jim. I need to go over that with you again. Jesus never let a tup of... Anyway. Anyway, yeah. For me, it's like I tried. I mean, I could say this honestly. I tried not to be a Christian. I tried not to follow Jesus.
I remember that yeah. period. He called me up, Jim. I think I'm going to try not being a Christian.
Yeah.
Okay.
I find Jesus compelling.
See, I knew what you were doing.
I didn't.
I could see from the outside. Yeah. I could see this. This is a man looking for answers and trying to make some order out of this chaos. What you did. All kidding aside, to leave your church, leave your livelihood, leave your seminary, all of that took tremendous courage. Most people aren't going to do that. And, that's the strength of your convictions.
It is true. There's a fine line between courage and stupidity, insanity.
Yeah, but... you're really pushing that line.
I know.
And it's fun to watch.
I know it is. I know. It's like, hey, Jim, mind if we get a few bucks from you for McDonald's? Anyway. No, part of this on the back to the reorder, one of the things I'm finding that's just blowing me away is God is so good. To me, reorder has been, just mind-bogglingly wonderful. And I would say to this moment, I say it to my wife, I don't care if we starve to death. I'm so grateful to be where I am today.
What'd she say to that?
She you know what? She was a little slower getting on board with starving to death, but she's
there.
She's with me. She's
that is
like,
a good woman.
She is a good woman, but she's just like, yeah. She's like, you know what? I see it. There's a freedom and a joy, and what you're doing in trying to create a space for people to enter into this with you, that's important. It's worth sacrifice. It's worth whatever it takes, man. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Infidel, for being a part of this little mini-series of, the Apostate and the Infidel.
Well, my pleasure, Mr. Apostate.
And I hope that you who are listening have a little bit of understanding for what that is all about, that Jim's being the infidel has nothing to do with running from God, and my being the apostate has nothing to do with running from God. It's really a hunger for God that drives the infidel and drives the apostate in me. And we are, just so... want to welcome you to be a part of a search for God. And really that's what Anchor Point's about, a search guided by love, but with wide open heart toward all people who are hungry for God. That's it.
Cool.
You can find a blog on today's topic along with the show notes at anchorpoint.org. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and add Curb Your Dogma to your RSS feed or iTunes.